Thanks for downloading this episode of Brexit, a Love Story. I'm Mark Mardell, and if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss a single episode. And once you've listened to this one, why not leave us a review? Thanks, and enjoy the programme. It's the conventional wisdom. An influx from the East changed the UK and pushed Britain towards Brexit.
The ordinary chappie in the street, their right pixie.
This area has been completely and utterly swamped.
The idea that some person who's unemployed in the north of England is prevented from getting a job by someone coming to work in the hospitality sector in London, I mean, it's just ridiculous.
But conventional wisdom is not welcome here.
I think they should put a stop to immigration totally. Stop all immigrants coming in, whether they be European, from the Far East, whatever.
Half of them don't go to work, living on bloody dole.
It's very, very upsetting to the people that wish to stay here, that can't afford to move. I think we feel threatened.
Did Tony Blair's government make a catastrophic mistake based on wrong figures which so soured the British public's attitude towards the European project that the love story was over forever? Or is it a bit more complicated than that?
If we wanted to crack down on freedom of movement, if you like, we could. The reasons we didn't was we didn't choose to as a country. And one of the tragedies of this whole argument is that we end up thinking it's a bad idea. It's a great idea.
I'm Mark Mardell, and this is Brexit, a love story. I have a new question. Did the relationship with the EU finally flounder on the rocks of a European dream? A dream of what it should be, open, united. We've been examining some snapshots from that 45-year relationship, hearing some intriguing insights from those who were there at the time, asking if they unwittingly wrote our future in the pages of the past. We've learnt few events are seen by all sides as unequivocally bad or good, but then some are.
I'm standing at the Berlin Wall, and now a huge cheer goes up as the first of the East Berliners come across to the West.
The top of this mechanical grabber is now just about to grab a big concrete pipe on the top.
The Berlin Wall came down, the Soviet Union fell, and the jigsaw of Europe was vigorously shaken. Germany reunited. Former Soviet states and the USSR's client nations of the East shook off the yoke of communism and turned their gaze westwards towards prosperity and democracy.
Off it comes.
The Iron Curtain had riven Europe and, well, you know where this is going. The clue is in the name, the European Union. 50 years ago, there were six. We joined with Denmark and Ireland. That made nine, soon to become the 12, with Greece, and then in 1986, Portugal and Spain. And 12, it stayed for 18 long years. So 2004 marked a momentous moment with momentous consequences. The man in charge of making it happen was the European Commissioner for Enlargement, Günther Verheugen, a German Social Democrat. Was there apprehension or excitement?
No. There were very mixed feelings. Until the year 2001, there was still a lot of resistance in member states. But then it changed. There was a lot of progress in candidate countries, and we could manage to convince member states that it was in their own interest. And during the whole period of negotiations, the UK government was my strongest ally.
Leading that strongest ally at the time, Tony Blair.
Britain had two big things that we argued for under Margaret Thatcher, under John Major, under myself. One was single market. The other was enlargement of the European Union. Single market was important for economic reasons. Enlargement was important for geopolitical and security reasons, because bringing Eastern Europe into the European Union was an important part of guaranteeing the eastern borders of Europe, of allowing those countries to develop into democracies, and to allow them to join the NATO alliance. And so this was a huge strategic objective. And I think when you look at the world today and you think of a resurgent Russian nationalism, thank heaven we did it.
Going under the unlovely name of enlargement, 10 new countries, 8 from the East, joined in 2004. Perhaps the slightly cynical British view was that this would put the brakes on plans for ever closer union, that like a snake bloated after swallowing a goat, the EU would have to rest up a while or risk indigestion. Part of the prize for these new countries was the right to travel and work in the more prosperous West. Lord Blunkett, then David Blunkett, was Home Secretary at the time.
I don't think that the debate was as thorough as it might have been about what the implications would be. It was just assumed that it would be a good thing because it would provide a broader Europe in which Britain would have greater influence.
There's long been a suspicion that the Foreign Office preferred widening the European Union as sort of a break on deepening it.
I think that's true. I don't think that was something that was debated sufficiently well inside government.
The new EU nations were certainly happy. Poland celebrated with a midnight military parade and fireworks. Estonia, with parties on the street. Hungary, with tastefully waved flags and a classical concert. They were enthusiastic about their new future, but among the old 12, caution, even fear. In France, the spectre was raised of the Polish plumber coming and taking French jobs. This wasn't some sudden alarm. Recognition of the worry had been built into the very bricks and mortars of the agreement which allowed them to join. The accession treaty, as it was called, spelt out that the old countries could stop people from the new ones coming to work for 2, 4, or even 7 years if it would harm the economy. They were called transitional arrangements. Only the Brits and the Commission were making the argument that Europe-wide there should be no such limits. Tony Blair makes the point that nothing could stop people coming, it could just stop them working, legally anyway.
Freedom of movement kicked in immediately. There was no transition of that. If you were a Polish person, you were free to come to Britain. There was the ability to have a 7-year transitional period on freedom to work. Now, it's true, the estimates we were given as to the numbers of people who come turned out to be way out. But the truth is, we were drawing people in because our economy was really strong. We needed the workforce. And actually, I think all the studies show that so far from taking people's jobs or being a drain on benefits, there was a net positive contribution from people coming.
You must have, because you knew that presumably the other countries, apart from Sweden and Ireland, were using this 7-year period. They were doing it for a reason. I mean, how much debate went into that decision?
Well, less than it would have if we'd known what the numbers were going to be blunt about it. But the other worry was that our economy was strong. There was no doubt people were going to come, and they were coming also because we were English language. Britain was a great place to come to. We had strong historic ties with Poland and other countries.
But they wouldn't have come if you'd used that allowance to stop people.
I was about to say, Germany didn't give freedom to work, had transitional arrangements, and still got a large number of people who just came anyway. So there's a very strong case for saying a large number of those people would have come in any event and may have ended up simply working here, you know, illegally.
One of the twists of what happened in 2004, and I didn't know this at the time,